Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Aesthetic Insider Radio Show. This is your host, Angela O'Mara. One of the many things that we have found that our listeners really enjoy to hear about is better ways for staff management, especially in an aesthetic practice. Today I have a super interesting guest on the show. We're here with Dr. Filiberto Rodriguez of RGV Cosmetic Surgery and Vein Care. Dr. Rodriguez is a cosmetic surgeon with practices in both Edinburgh, Texas, and Brownsville, Texas, which is in the south of the state. Dr. Rodriguez, welcome to Aesthetic Insider.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Yeah, well, you know, we were talking, one of the things that is obviously very important to our listeners who, you know, the majority of them are physicians within the aesthetic industry, plastic and dermatologists and all of those specialties that are represented here, have practice management issues and things that are new to them. And so one of the things I did really want to get in touch with, it was about with Cedar HR Solutions. I understand that is a company that you work with to help with your medical practice staff management and training. Is that correct?
Yes. I've been with Cedar now coming up on almost 4 years as far as managing my human resources and employee manual policies and procedures. Type things, and they've been very good to work with, very helpful.
So, Dr. Rodriguez, can you give us some background about yourself and your practice before I start asking you lots of questions about Cedar? Like I said, I understand you have two locations, and for many of us, managing one is not always easy, but managing two, I would imagine, has new sets of issues for you to deal with.
Yeah, no question that one of the things that my wife and I, who's also a physician, she's in my practice, she was in OBGYN, but now helps me manage the varicose vein component of our practice. And we juggle almost on a daily basis where we're going to be staffing our staff to cover our clinics, because both run full-time 5 days a week, both locations. So my history is, I did study undergraduate at Princeton University with a degree in economics while I was completing my pre-med studies before attending the University of Virginia for medical school on a full scholarship. And then my initial plan was to do cardiothoracic surgery. My father started the heart surgery program here in McAllen, Texas in 1983 after training in Cleveland Clinic and Mayo Clinic. So I was at Stanford University training for cardiothoracic surgery for over 9 years, including general surgery, the research, and then the fellowship. And then halfway through that fellowship, I had a sudden neck injury that caused me to take some time off after I recovered from neck surgery. And my neurosurgeon recommended strongly against me returning to cardiac, which required wearing loops and standing in a static standing position for prolonged periods of time. And I'd always enjoyed plastic reconstructive surgery. I was fortunate to obtain a fellowship position at the plastic surgery program at UCLA. I did that for a year, reconstructive surgery, before I had a second neck injury, forcing me to resign from that program and focus the whole year on rehabbing my neck. And during that time, I began working with a retired heart surgeon down here who had started a very large varicose vein clinic. And once I was healthy, I applied and was accepted into a cosmetic surgery fellowship, which I completed at Scottsdale, Arizona. And that fellowship was instrumental in me learning how to really manage a large, busy practice. I think my mentor had 18 to 20 employees, and that's kind of where I find myself today.
What a story. I mean, that is amazing that, you have obviously a very great educational background here, and then the switching careers has given you, I would imagine, quite an all-encompassing understanding of many aspects of the medical and aesthetic field. So you have two locations, and how many staff do you actually have now, but go back and forth between those two locations?
Yeah, it's about 19 people, not including the physicians. You know, my wife and I don't really count us as employees since we kind of run the practice, but yeah, we have about 18 to 19 employees.
Okay, yeah, that's a big team. And what procedures that you mentioned vein, but what are the procedures that are you and your practice especially known for now?
Well, in our office settings, we perform all of our varicose vein treatments. We use laser ablation treatment for greater saphenous vein reflux and microstep lobectomies for the visible residual varicose veins, followed finally by sclerotherapy for the small residual spider veins. And we're very known for that. We're the largest clinic in the area for the vein treatments. And then as far as myself as a cosmetic surgeon, I'm basically known as the person who will fix you if you went to Mexico and had a bad job done, or you really want to get a complex mommy makeover, abdominoplasty with or without a hysterectomy, which is complex in and of itself, complex revision breast augmentation, transumbilical breast augmentation, revision breast surgery, basically anything neck down on the body, including gluteal implants, body implants, obviously fat transfer and liposuction to multiple areas. And that really drives us, keeping me busy in the OR maybe 4 to 5 days a week while our vein clinic's running in both places and seeing patients in consults.
Mm, that's wonderful.
So all that kind of keeps us busy.
You sound like you're very busy. That's wonderful. You know, now you mentioned earlier that you also studied economics at Princeton. Is that what you had said?
Yes, I did do that. That was actually on purpose.
Well, and what made you, you know, because I have had, you know, a couple of other doctors on the show in the past who have got an MBA, or, you know, they've done some other kind of more business-type programs after they've, you know, gotten their MD. What made you decide to study economics at Princeton?
Well, you know, like I alluded to earlier, I grew up, my father was a cardiac surgeon. He had traditional educational background, were primarily biology and medical school. And one thing I saw him suffering with was, one, managing his practice and staff, two, managing his finances in terms of proper investments. I mean, he did great. He's a heart surgeon in the 80s. But I just saw that certainly that's something that was lacking in medical education and training. And, you know, an economics degree at Princeton is not equivalent to a business degree per se, but it certainly helped structure my thinking, very analytical, you know, algorithmic thinking, and also understanding concepts, you know, cost-benefit, supply and demand. I think these issues are extremely relevant when you talk about an aesthetic surgery practice, cosmetic surgery practice, which is really retail medicine.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely, that retail medicine is something that I think many aesthetic surgeons overlook. You know, they still think they're a medical practice and treating sick people when that's not necessarily the case. So it seems like, you know, you obviously have learned quite a lot from your father being a surgeon, and then you mentioned that your wife is also a medical doctor. What other learning experience would you have that you can apply to running a practice based on, you know, your understanding of them?
Well, you know, maybe not so much from my father or my wife, but I would say one of the most unique elements of my training was the 3 years of research I spent at Stanford studying, you know, cardiac surgery and mitral valve disease. And that was the first time I was pulled out of the traditional medical student, resident, do what you're told when you're told, and put into a very leadership position. You know, we managed, as the research fellows, a team of 10 people under us, including the veterinarians who helped us take care of our large animals because we were doing large animal surgery. The veterinarian would come in to do the anesthesia, our junior fellows in the lab. So that experience, and then working with my mentor in the lab to synthesize my data, to properly present it in an organized fashion at the national meeting level, it was a very educational experience that certainly affected how I came back to my general surgery and cardiac surgery training and much more advanced places as far as how to interact with people. And Stanford training stressed that to me a lot. And then, as I alluded to, I was very fortunate to do my cosmetic surgery fellowship at the Body Sculpting Center in Scottsdale, Arizona. And my mentor there had successfully built his own ambulatory surgery center with 2 ORs, had a very large clinic with a large staff, and successfully managed a staff of almost 20 people. And, you know, he's the one who introduced me to the importance of policies and procedures, you know, hiring and firing criteria, vacation policies, all these little things that you kind of take for granted, especially if you come out of your medical training and you kind of go work for someone else's practice or go work for a hospital. But really understanding that, you know, if you're going to be employing all these people, you have a huge responsibility. And that's, he's really what, who introduced me to that concept of, you know, policies, procedures, and managing staff.
Now, would you say there was any kind of a catalyst that helped you decide, you know, when you were going to go into private practice, that you were going to kind of, like you mentioned, you've been working with CEDA for the past 4 years now. What was it that kind of helped develop that relationship for you?
Well, I remember when I got accepted into my cosmetic surgery fellowship, I received in the mail what was essentially my proctor's policies and procedures manual that I had to sign off on, initial every page, and send back to him. And in that, I started seeing, you know, hiring, firing criteria, what are grounds for disciplinary action, when are vacations observed. Everything was kind of loosely spelled out there. It was a short 20-page manual. It was nothing as all-inclusive as what I got from CEDAR, but that's what introduced me to this concept of needing this type of document to help me manage my staff. And he graciously gave me a copy of it, which I modified for my purposes when I finished and came back down, because I instantly inherited a large staff once I took over this large vein clinic from the older heart surgeon. So I knew instantly I was going to need to, I mean, at that time it was maybe 10 employees, you know, not as much, but still I needed to establish order. And he was running it more mom and pop, old-fashioned style, the way most doctors do, where everything was just kind of, nothing was really written. Everything was just kind of verbally, I guess we'll make it up as we go along. Mm-hmm. And I saw that that's not where you need to be in medicine anymore. In my lifetime, I've certainly seen how Medicare has devastated cardiac surgery by cutting reimbursement. I've seen how Medicare audits and the fear of fraud is worse today than 20 years ago when doctors were more worried about being sued. And then I saw that because there's tort reform in Texas, as there is in California, most lawyers aren't interested in malpractice suits against doctors. What they're interested in is low-lying fruit, which is employment law violations, which if you don't have a policies and procedures in place and you don't know what the difference is between an exempt employee and a non-exempt employee and one who gets paid overtime and who doesn't, you can get into a lot of trouble really fast.
Yeah, it is interesting. It seems to be that it's almost like a growing trend in, like you said, it's a low-hanging fruit. It's something they can go after easily. Many physicians are not understanding of simple compliances that can become big problems.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was basically made aware of this. I was kind of happy with this little packet I had in place, and certainly something's better than nothing, but one of the hospitals here, we in McAllen, Texas, we have one of the largest physician-owned hospitals in the country here, and the New York Times actually wrote interesting articles about it in the past, but more to the point, they sponsored a continuing medical education lecture entitled Preventing Embezzlement and Litigation in Your Practice, and this was given by Paul from CEDAR. He's the one who started CEDAR. That's why I was introduced. And so, you know, first thing he asked, who in this room has a policies and procedures manual? And I think I was the only one in my hand who in the room who raised my hand. And he said, well, I'd like to take a look at what you got and let me see what I can help you with after this, if you don't mind. And as he went through the talk and I started learning about nuances about employment law, and it was obvious that I needed, you know, someone like CEDAR. And when I looked at it financially, you know, it was not very expensive to get started, a couple $1,000s, and then that gave me a huge policy and procedure manual. And then the most important part of it was the monthly support for a small amount of money. I think it's less than $200 a month. I have access to their employment law experts anytime a question comes up, or if I have to, you know, fire someone. Where we're in the process of hiring someone, we make sure we follow all the steps properly so that someone can't come back and say that we did something wrong.
Now, when you first began working with CEDAR HR Solutions, did you have any employee issues, or was it just purely because you had a handbook and you were sitting in this conference and then Paul helped you understand that your employee handbook could do with some updating? You know, how did your relationship come about?
I have my employee handbook, and at that time, I think we were already up to maybe 12 or 14 employees, and I haven't had any particular problems with them, but this is something that I would fall under as preventative medicine and something that's necessary to successfully run a small business. And
yeah.
I think that a lot of time physicians don't understand is what we do, if you are in private practice, and most aesthetic providers are, because no one's going to pay you to be an aesthetic provider in a hospital. So by definition, you are essentially running a small business. And to do so, you have to have policies and procedures.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, absolutely. An employee handbook, obviously, that clearly sets out responsibilities and parameters, I would imagine, must bring a sense of order to the practice, especially one with a large staff like yours. Would you agree?
I couldn't agree more. And one of the things that Cedar helped me do and understand that it's actually important to have very clearly defined job responsibilities for everyone in the practice. So we have a job responsibilities that they helped me with that included things I would have never thought about, like must have fine muscle coordination for my surgical assistants. Well, that's kind of obvious, but they literally spell it out. So we have job descriptions for front desk, job descriptions for medical assistants in the back, job descriptions for our ultrasound technician, job description for our nurse injector, nurse practitioner. Everyone has separate jobs, and there's a description that's appropriate to that, and they sign it, and they agree that these are their job responsibilities and descriptions that are obviously are not all-inclusive but are pretty descriptive.
Yeah, and I would imagine that when the staff are clear on, you know, what you expect of them and what your practice manager expects of them, it actually helps improve their performance and general happiness within the job, I would imagine.
No, there's no question that there's less room for error because no one has to assume what their job responsibility is. They kind of know what their responsibility is. And then secondly, if there is a problem, it's very easy for us to bring them in, point out, hey, listen, you are not meeting this criteria or you're successfully failing this. You know, we have a policy for tardiness, policy for, you know, improper performance of job, especially if it puts patients at risk. You know, if you suggest patients to the risk of wrong site surgery, well, that's clearly under the responsibility of a medical assistant to make sure that there's a pre-op checklist that's performed properly. And so it makes creating a record of disciplinary action much easier.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. And that is that record is so important, especially when it comes down to any disputes that need to be settled with the labor board. You know, now
that's
tell
exactly
me, because,
right.
Yeah, you know, I know Cedar HR Solutions writes, from what I understand, very comprehensive employee handbooks that are customized and specific to each practice. And then those handbooks are also checked by their in-house specialist attorneys. Even so, did you ever have an employee situation that came at you out of left field, so to speak, that was not covered in the employee handbook?
Yeah, there's a couple things there in what you brought up. As far as the customized employee handbook, that's, I think, where listeners have to understand that that means a lot of work on the part of the provider. So they will send you an employee manual that's very long, about 80 pages, but in no way is it complete and in no way is it customized. I customized it to my practice based on their guidelines. So there's a question, they say, what's your practice description? What's your practice philosophy? Okay, when do you want to observe holidays? Do you want to observe holidays? And so I kind of had an idea. So how are you going to give your patients your vacation time? How are you going to structure that? Do they have to be an employee for a year before they get vacation time or 6 months? So there's a lot of leeway on how we do that. And that is what they mean by the customizable. And then, yes, they do check. They're out of Arizona, but they are very well-versed, especially in particular in Texas employment law and also California employment law. But certainly if there's someone from out of those three states, they do the research to make sure that everything's compliant for each state. And so once their employment manual is in place, I have a separate nurse injector who is paid by commission. And we had drafted a separate agreement for her because in terms of her how to pay her by commission. But one thing that wasn't in that agreement was, well, what happens if I have to make a refund? or happens to have to refund the money. And so there's a law, right? I can't just go to my nurse injector and say, hey, I have to refund the money. You owe me that back. Because unless it's explicitly stated and she's agreed, I, as an employer, can't do that to an employee. Unless that's been agreed upon before and that they sign off and agree that if I have to refund, that will be subtracted from their commission. And so that was redrafted, and we've resolved that problem. Now, that's something definitely we didn't expect, and most providers wouldn't expect to think of that little detail in their agreements with their nurse injectors. But that's one example, and they're very plastic. They're very, you know, they work very well to, oh, okay, let's fix that.
Yeah, interesting, yeah, because that is definitely something that, you know, you don't really think about. Well, what happens if you do have to issue a refund to somebody, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, for you, most doctors would think it's intuitive. Oh, well, then my nurse injector gives you the money back. See, but the law doesn't make it that simple. That's the problem, is a lot of what seems intuitive when dealing with employees is not. The law has made it very complicated, and the law is designed, in all honesty, to protect the employee and not the physician. Because the physician is the employer. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's definitely what I've understood, is that the labor board is definitely on the side of the employee. And in many instances, that's a good thing. But in some instances, then, you know, perhaps, you know, it doesn't really help the employer in any way. You know, I do have a question, because, you know, you mentioned earlier about how, you know, when you first began working with CEDAR and they had a specific, you know, thing that to initiate you as a new client of theirs and the employee handbook, and then you said now you're on a monthly customer agreement. So is that where you can call in and ask questions, or how does that support help you in the practice?
Well, I mean, that support's part of the deal. I mean, I think anyone who just does this to get the employee manual and doesn't do the monthly support is really missing out, because anytime there's a patient, anytime there's an employee issue, you need to have someone. And it's, you know, if a provider thinks, how expensive would it be to call my lawyer every time I had an employee question? That would increase the cost extremely.
Put you out of business.
As opposed to having CEDAR on call, basically, I think it's less than $200 a month. I really don't know exactly what I pay, but I know it's very little. And yes, there have been months where I've had to fire a physician associate, you know, who breached his employment contract, but it wasn't that simple. It was pretty complicated. You know, it's a big deal firing another doctor, much less firing just employees. So, yeah, so I have questions, you know, hey, and you got to make it so that they can't come back at you and claim wrongful termination, that they can't come back and claim ageism against you, that they can't come back at you and claim. So absolutely, when these decisions are being made, they're very complicated and have to be done just right. So it's gotten to the point where my office manager, my director of operations, she is on a first-name basis with one of the top employment lawyers there at CEDAR, and she'll send her an email, say, hey, look, we're having this going on in practice. What do you recommend? And then they'll hash out a solution before they bring me into the loop, you know, and then they say, hey, this is what's going on. I talk with CEDAR about it. This is what they recommend. And I go, you know what, I agree. That makes a lot of sense. And that helps tremendously, because obviously I'm really only productive if I'm in the OR operating or seeing patients. I have a person who I hired, thankfully, who had experience in human resources. And for her, having CEDAR as a resource is invaluable, because she kind of has an idea what to do. She calls up CEDAR, and they tell her exactly this is how you need to do it. And we'll actually help type up the document to have the employee sign this, you know, blah. So it's an extremely helpful resource.
Wow. Now, I would imagine, you know, you say, you know, like by figuring out the secret to freeing yourself from all these internal practice employee management tasks, you can spend more time doing what you love to do and what you do best, and that's to be in the OR. So what are your next steps for the future with your practice and what you're creating there in Texas?
You know, we've been here to the point where, you know, I'm obviously having my father's same name really helped as far as name recognition, having been from the town and everyone knows what my education's been, what my process has been. They were very welcoming me when I returned to the community, and as a result, especially also with my wife's reputation and her father's reputation, you know, our practice grew very quickly. So now we're at the point where we know what our volume is on a steady. This goes back to the economic training. So I know now I can look back for the past maybe 5-6 years and look and say, okay, this is what I've been trending in terms of surgery per month, per year. This is how much I'm expending on OR fees. And for this much money, I can build my own 2OR ambulatory surgery center, build myself a bigger office that I need in order to see the patients I'm seeing. Since I'm operating 4 days a week, I need to be able to see patients easily between cases and not have to. Thankfully, my office is very close to the 2 ORs where I primarily operate, but still that involves driving somewhere as opposed to walking into the next room. So we're in the process of building ourselves a 16,000-square-foot ambulatory surgery center combined with our new offices. And that's we're still going to keep our second location in Brownsville, Texas, but that's going to be the big change.
Well, congratulations. That sounds wonderful. And what a great thing to be doing, I mean, especially for you and your patients and having such a much larger presence in the community.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And it is actually ultimately having one place where I do my surgeries ultimately enhances patient safety, because one of the variables, if you're having to operate at 2 or 3 different facilities, is they have different staff that may not be familiar with your case. And so you eliminate that variability. So ultimately, this further enhances patient safety.
Now, based on, you know, your experience in your own practice and, you know, all of these different centers where you've been trained and family help and working with CEDA for the past 4 years, is there anything to a new physician starting out? Because, you know, many physicians, you know, they start out on their own or they start out with a part-time, you know, secretary, receptionist, or, you know, they don't walk into a practice with 10 existing staff members. But what would be, you know, some advice that you can give to our listeners that are new to aesthetics and new to a private practice?
One of my best friends from college is a urologist in Los Angeles, and he'd been working in a group practice for many years, and politics of the dynamics, whatever, he and one of the other associates decided to break away and start their own private practice. And, you know, in doing so, they were going to have to hire medical assistants, they're going to have to hire, you know, front desk staff and a biller, et cetera. So all of that, I told him, look, you need to just start working with CEDAR from the beginning to simplify all of this for you, because you can easily get into a lot of trouble if you don't do things right, especially in California.
Yeah.
And so he took that advice, and he called CEDAR, and he's been working with them to get the policy procedures done right from the beginning. Now, most practitioners who are new to aesthetics, I think it's different. If you're a family practice doctor who's trying to transition into a med spa practice, you probably have a pretty big staff already, and you should have policies and procedures in place. I think this is more of an issue for like a new plastic surgeon right out of training who's going to rent an office and hire staff. Even though they may think they have a small staff, like I only have one front desk and one medical assistant helping me, you still kind of need policies and procedures to take care of those two.
That one person, yeah.
Exactly, to make sure that things are being done by the book. Because as much as you may know about medicine and or surgery, you really don't know a lot about employment law, because that's just not something that we were trained in.
Of course.
So I think it's an error to assume, oh, well, it's not that big a deal, I can take care of it myself. I think that's the mistake that often is made in private practice physicians. Because, you know, the concept of a private practice physician is it's a historic thing of the past, because most residents coming out of training today take on full-time employment at hospitals. I think that's where aesthetic surgery and dentistry is another example that's an exception, is very unique, because most of the people who practice aesthetic surgery are independent business owners. They're not employed by anyone to be a cosmetic surgeon, like I said earlier. That's also, CEDAR actually got their start working with dentists, who for years have had to deal with large staff, hiring and firing, because most dentists are small business owners, just like aesthetic surgeries. and aesthetic dermatologists.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, definitely, and I do think for our listeners who are new to us and new to the private practice, I think having a chat with somebody over at Cedar and getting those policies and even job descriptions in place before you hire somebody, so then you can be hiring based on, you know, a job description that works for you. But, you know, Dr. Rodriguez... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to add on what you said. One of the things is even if you have employees, you still work with Cedar, get a policy and procedures manual in place, and have your existing employees sign the new policies and procedures. And that way everyone's on board. This isn't something like, oh, moving forward. No, this is retroactive too. Like, I already have a great set of employees, but let me get my policy and procedures in place, have them sign off on their job descriptions, have them sign off on their policies and procedures, so that moving forward, if there's any problems, I'm taken care of.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I absolutely agree with you. You know, Dr. Rodriguez, for our listeners, you know, we have come to the end of our show here, but for our listeners who would want to know more about you and your practice, is there a website that they can look at? If you can share that with us,
absolutely.
That would be great.
Yeah, we actually have two websites. Our main website is RGV, which is short for Rio Grande Valley, which is where we live in South Texas. So it's rgvcosmetic.com. And then we also have valleyvein.com. But rgvcosmetic.com, and certainly people are welcome to visit our site and learn a little bit more about what we do.
Well, great. Well, Dr. Rodriguez, thank you so much. This has been such a really informative interview, and I'd love to have you back on the show again sometime in the future.
Absolutely. I'd be honored. Thank you.
Okay, well, great. Well, you have a great day, and thank you so much once again, Dr. Rodriguez.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.